No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that tries to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia. Today I have a very, very special guest and a very, very special issue. And we have with us J. Brian Atwood, former administrator, director of USAID. I would go over the rest of his credentials, but it would take the whole show. Ambassador Atwood, thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you for having me, Michael. Appreciate it.
Let me just ask you, let's start out with how important is USAID to our foreign policy? I know that we, you know, that people know that we give out foreign aid to USAID, but I don't think they fully realize what it is that USAID does. So can you outline that quickly for us?
Yeah, I think it's best explained by a comment that President George W. Bush made when he was putting out his national security strategy. He said basically that strategy rests on having a strong defense, an effective diplomacy, and development, which is the third leg. That's what AID does, basically, in a national security sense, prevent crises. It is investing in developing countries to try to deal with who are dealing with poverty. It basically invests in a more healthy society. It addresses directly infectious diseases that could eventually come to our shores. It deals with the climate change issue by preserving tropical rainforests. It provides medical help to women and children. There's a huge children's program to make sure that they have the basic vaccinations and inoculations before the age of five, and it's saved millions of children over the years. And unfortunately, what's happening right now is all those programs have been stopped in their tracks, and there are millions of people that are suffering because they don't have access to their, whether it's antiretroviral AID, HIV AIDS medications, the whole gamut. It's just a disaster because the American people are going to suffer in the long run.
Well, and that's right. I mean, I know that a group of former administrators from both Republicans and Democrats have already come out with a joint statement saying exactly that, right, Brian, that this hurts Americans because this is the face of America, is it not? This is what people, I've been lucky enough to travel around the world and lecture, and I can tell you everywhere I go, and I know you know this, America is still seen as that shining light on the hill, right? And this is the face of America, USAID. And so in the end, this is really a diplomatic disaster for us. It's not only a diplomatic disaster for the world, but it's a diplomatic disaster for us as well, is it not?
It absolutely is. And it, you know, there's no agency, perhaps the one exception would be the Peace Corps, that has as much goodwill in the world as does USAID. It's welcomed everywhere. I think one of the things that people need to understand is we have been such a leader in this ever since Truman announced his point four, which was that the rich countries have an obligation to help the poor countries. Then John F. Kennedy created USAID, and the basic thrust of it is that we have led other rich countries to contribute to the extent that we now have an annual official development assistance contribution to the developing countries of about $233 billion. Now, that $233 billion does a lot of things. I've mentioned some of them. But the other thing it does is to create economic growth in these societies. They work on the microeconomic systems, whether it's a tax system or a custom system, an export-import law, a banking system. They work on all of those things to the point where foreign investors will say, okay, the risk now has been limited. We can now invest in these countries. And what that $233 billion has created $1.3 trillion of foreign direct investment. So the world itself has become more prosperous, obviously more peaceful, obviously exceptions. But it's a very, very important aspect of preventing conflict in the future. Anytime a society is wrecked by poverty, the glue of a society breaks apart and extreme versions of religion or whatever take over, terrorism results. It's just, that's why I think George W. Bush designated development as being as important as defense and diplomacy.
Yeah, absolutely. And didn't it start out that way? Didn't JFK start the whole organization with the idea that we should be out there reaching out to other countries instead of letting just the former Soviet Union and other people do that? I mean, this really is one of the most important arms of American diplomacy, and nobody would know better than you, given all the diplomatic positions that you held. But let me ask you, can you, in your wildest imagination, understand why they would want to do this? Why? I just don't understand why you would want to put 10,000 employees on furlough for such an important organization that stops so many important programs. Any speculation on why you would do this?
The initial announcement was that they were going to do a 90-day review of the existing programs. There's nothing wrong with doing a review, but then you fire all the people that are supposed to be doing the review, and you wonder what the real motive is. And the real motive, as we have now learned, is to abolish the agency. I really honestly don't think even Secretary of State Marco Rubio believes in that. He's always made positive statements about foreign aid in the past. And I think it's Elon Musk, one of the richest men in the world, basically destroying a program that helps the poorest people in the world. It's cruel. It's just terribly unusual in terms of the way the government of the United States operates, because all of these programs have been approved by Congress, by bipartisan votes. USAID itself, during my tenure, it was originally, by the way, established by executive order by John F. Kennedy. And that meant that it was somewhat vulnerable to change. But in my tenure, we managed to get a statute passed, basically creating AID as a statutory agency. So it cannot be abolished without the approval of Congress. And the money that is not being spent now is being impounded. And that's a total violation of the Impoundment Control Act, which was adopted during the Nixon years, when Nixon tried to stop certain government programs that had already been appropriated for. So it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, I don't know how many more barriers Elon Musk can break before the Congress sits up and takes on these things. It seems to be outrageous.
Yeah, and you know, I can't figure out if they just don't know what the hell they're doing, or whether there's some method to their madness. Because, I mean, let's talk about foreign policy for a second. We're going to invade Greenland. We're going to make Canada 51st state, which I have a personal problem with. And we're going to build condos in Gaza. I mean, how crazy is this? Is this just You know, the only thing I could think of is I think of the old joke where the teenage kid wrecked a car and comes in and tells his parents he's dying. And then he says, and then when they get all upset, he goes, no, I'm not. I'm doing fine. I just wrecked a car. You know, I wonder if that's what they're trying to do. Say something so outrageous that then they can go back to the Middle East, for example, and say to the Israelis and the Palestinians, sit down and negotiate something.
I mean, what he said the other day on Gaza is just off the top of his head. I mean, usually when a president makes a statement that is as significant as that, there's a process you go through. Every agency has a chance to let you know what the potential pitfalls are, let you know what the international law requires, let you know what the history is. And it seems to me that from what I read in the paper today, even his own White House staff didn't know that he was going to suggest that we take over Gaza. It's just, I mean, it's totally outrageous. So off I mean, the wall.
It's just crazy. And I know this America First nonsense, which really means, I think, to a lot of people, America only. Isolationism is a, right? We're both students of history. Isolationism is something that's really never worked, but always has appeal, it seems, to a certain group of people, you know, take care of us, don't take care of anybody else. But unfortunately, we're not in the world alone. As a diplomat, you certainly understand that. Is there any way that, I know when I ran a public interest group, and at the time, this may not still be true, but at the time, Americans gave more in foreign aid when it came to humanitarian aid. They gave more in dollars and cents than the federal government did to humanitarian aid. I don't know if that's still true, but is there a way we can fill the gap, do you think, that this is going to leave?
Well, I don't know what they're going to do about humanitarian. I mean, there's sort of a distinction here. Humanitarian relief, you know, we put people in to save lives when there's been a natural disaster or maybe the results of a war. And the USAID takes the lead in the U.S. government in doing that kind of work, often working with the military if the crisis is really it's to the extent that we can't handle it alone. But then development aid is basically long-term investment in working with partners to try to improve their education system, the environment within a society, the economic opportunities within a society. And over the years, again, because we've shared the burden with other rich countries, we've seen a heck of a lot of progress. I mean, even countries that are now sort of our adversaries, like China, for example, have grown and have benefited from foreign assistance. They now are providing it themselves and trying to impose their view of how a government should work. The authoritarian view, the Communist Party view, and they're probably absolutely delighted that we're just saying we're going to step off the field. You've got it all to yourself, China. It's just quite amazing.
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but isn't it true that communism does a lot better in poverty-stricken countries than it does in the industrialized world, right? Even the Chinese and Russians have embraced capitalism now. But
that's right.
Isn't poverty fertile ground for communism?
Absolutely. I mean, it's an extreme. I think it runs counter to human nature because it doesn't offer incentive. It's the government telling people this is what you've got to do. And I think it's been proven over the years that when there is freedom, there is also innovation. There is that small businesses are created. I mean, the whole system is improved when you don't have an authoritarian government telling you what to do and punishing you. I mean, I have one of the things that scares me about what's going on now is that there seems to be an effort to basically ask federal employees to report on one another. It just seems to be very authoritarian in the way they're approaching this. And it seems that Elon Musk is very comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think they are, unfortunately. And I don't know, you know, what the next steps for us as citizens should be. I've seen that there was a great outcrying, a protest in front of, I think it was Commerce the other day, with, or maybe it was the Justice Department, where literally thousands or hundreds of people showed up to protest this. Let me ask you, is USAID, can they accept the buyout? Has a buyout been offered to them?
Well, a judge just basically made a ruling within the last hour, I think, saying that the buyout is illegal. You can't do it. I mean, there's never been clarified, but how do you put people on administrative leave and then and still expect them to contribute something? It's apparently been thrown out, at least temporarily. So I don't know whether they can access it or not, given this this judicial ruling.
But a lot
of people don't want to do it. They don't want to contribute to the dismantling of government.
And you know that as the administrator, people aren't going to work for USAID because they want to get rich. They're
right.
going to work for USAID because they want to make a better world. And it seems to me that when you do the furlough thing, when you do the buyout thing, what you lose are the most talented people, right? The people that have options to do other things, you know? And if you keep, you know, if there's any dead wood there, that's who you're keeping, right? Because they don't have options to go. And it's all absolutely crazy.
Yeah, because USAID uses experts in the various sectors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these people, many of them have PhD degrees or master's degrees. They're experts in the environment or education or whatever the field. And, of course, the problem with then, even if AID exists and move it into the State Department, diplomats, who also are very talented, they have their own orientation. It's an entirely different mission. They are generalists, usually. And they don't have that degree of expertise. But their expectation is that if they move them in the State Department, the diplomats can then basically order the aid people around. And the aid people don't like that either because they don't understand the concept of sustainable development. They are crisis-oriented, and their goal is to influence the behavior of other countries as opposed to partnering with the countries to achieve a development goal.
It's just incredible to me. Well, I know that these days, among your many other accomplishments, you're at Brown University, one of the great colleges in America. Are you getting any feedback from young people on campus? Are they outraged at this, or you know, or do they not understand it?
I think there's a people are kind of depressed. They don't know quite what to do. There's a good deal of frustration that the Congress hasn't done anything yet. Well, we have to understand the Congress is just getting organized, and this series of executive orders is like a tsunami. I mean, that's exactly what they plan to do. Yeah, I think it's an irony that during the campaign, the 2025 report that the Heritage Foundation put out, Trump said, "I don't know anything about it." Well, obviously he did. That's the plan. And so they wrote all these executive orders after the election. And now everybody's swamped, not knowing exactly how to respond. The courts have started to respond. Certain members of Congress have already protested, but they don't have a vehicle yet. And the vehicle would be a hearing or it would be legislation. And I think the timing of this is when the continuing resolution expires and government no longer has any money to spend, that'll be the crisis. That's when the Democrats and Republicans who are concerned, for example, about foreign aid, will have a chance to voice their concern and hopefully have some leverage to fix this problem.
Well, if there is a bright spot, right, it's that several Republicans in the Senate that I know, and probably in the House as well, have come out, I guess none of them come out and say this idea is crazy, but you can hear in their speech and the way Rubio and the others talk about this that they're not in favor of it, and that, yeah, that it's likely that they won't actually. What do you think the likelihood is that they'll actually shut down USAID, or that there'll be some kind of compromise made which will keep the organization going?
Yeah, I think there'll be a compromise, and I think the organization will continue, because it's interesting. We're making good use of this crisis in the sense that you and many other outlets are spending a lot of time on what USAID does. Most of the American people don't realize that their own welfare and well-being are directly related to what AID does in preventing diseases from coming into the country. And basically also the aspect of Americans that value that is relates to generosity. I think that some evangelical groups are supporting foreign aid, even though they might not support government for other reasons, but they think it's part of their religious obligation. And I think all of those factors will come into play here as this issue gets vetted publicly.
Well, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to have to play out before we really, I guess, see how this coalesces. But let me ask you about, this is flying around on social media right now, and you understand that, we both understand that, everything on social media is taken with a grain of salt, but there's people out there saying that USAID was involved, as well as the CIA, with investigating the president, and that this is retaliatory. Any sense about that?
There's no evidence to that. There's absolutely no evidence to that. And I mean, there have been whistleblowers who, in the CIA, I guess, mainly, that were concerned about the president when he basically tried to play politics with aid to Ukraine when he was in office. That was the result of the first impeachment. And so he's very upset. He's also trying to go after the FBI agents that were involved in Mar-a-Lago and looking into the, these people carrying out their duties as assigned. It isn't as if they had a choice. It's just really outrageous. It's all part of the retribution agenda that the president has. It's really dangerous, damaging to the way public service servants operate.
Which is crazy and it's palatable. I don't know that you if you've ever seen this in politics. I'm not sure that I ever have, but I heard a press conference the other day from the new press secretary, and every other word out of her mouth seemed to be Joe Biden. We're going to close down the border like Joe Biden should have done. We're going to keep murderers and rapists from coming in to the country like Joe Biden let them all in. We're going to get down the price of eggs, which Joe Biden, I guess President Biden went out and personally killed the chickens. I don't know. But the point is, as an elected official, the rule is when you win, you're gracious, right? No matter what you said about the person prior to the election, the day after the election, even if you lose, you're gracious, right? You're gracious on both ends. These people just seem to be out to get everybody.
Yeah. even the air crash tragedy happened. Blaming it on Biden and DEI or whatever. It's just, I don't know. I think it's, I've try to tell friends who were trying to figure out who to vote for, it's a matter of character. I mean, I've worked with both with Democrats and Republicans. I've worked as a staffer in the Senate, and a lot of the Republicans, I might not agree with their policy positions, but I respected the character of some of them, not all of them. And the same would be true of Democrats. There are some Democrats that lack character. You can tell. And frankly, this guy just he lacks character. I'm sorry. He just, I don't know how he was raised, but not the way I was raised.
Well, and you can't, I'm not sure you can be a great leader without character. I mean, I don't know. You know, I just came from, you were probably, well, I don't know, you might have been in Boston, but I just came from Jimmy Carter's funeral. And, you know, one thing you say about Carter, right, is, you know, you can criticize some of the things he did as president, of course, but he was a great man with great character. We had a woman on our podcast, a journalist, a couple of years ago, that had just gone to a Sunday school class. He was 98 years old. He was still teaching Sunday school. This is a man who understood that with, as Kennedy used to say, right, with great privilege comes great responsibility. And I don't think these guys know that. I think they think with great privilege comes great privilege, you know, and that's certainly unfortunate. And my big fear is that we lose more people like Brian Atwood, who many people that I know over the years have really respected you, Brian, and the work you do. I've never heard a bad word said about you. And,
well,
if you're in Washington and you can say that about somebody, that's really outstanding. And that's what I fear, sure, that you still have good people, as I think, as you just pointed out, on both sides of the aisle, but they're going to start leaving, right? Who wants to put up with this?
And I
fear that that's just going to leave a big hole in our government here. And, well, Brian, let me ask you, because I know you've got to run soon. Go ahead.
Let me just say this, that I respect the work you've done, too. I would love to see the 51st state be the District of Columbia. I'm not sure it's going to happen under this administration.
Anytime soon, but I appreciate that. And let me just give a shout out to our mutual friend, Ann Kitlaus, who reached out to you and got you to come on today, or asked you to come on today. That's very nice. I love her, and I'm sure you do too. I think we met briefly at her wedding. Let me ask, because I know you got to run soon. What do you want to say, Brian, that I haven't asked you? I know there's so much to say here.
Well, I guess to try to be a little bit uplifting, it's very difficult. This is a dark time, and I'm teaching young people, very bright, brown students, and they're the future. And if they become so discouraged by all that's going on, I mean, try to let them know that we've been through dark times in this country before. I mean, those who suffered slavery and the Jim Crow period, and remind them that even women didn't have the right to vote until the 1920s, and then we went through the Depression. I mean, all of these McCarthyism, all of these periods, we've always come out stronger in the end. And I think that there seem to be no inhibitions on the president this time. The last time he had people around him that understood the Constitution. I mean, General John Kelly and Mattis and others that were in his administration and basically either ignored him or told him he couldn't do it. He doesn't have that this time. And that's what's really dangerous. But it just seems to me that because he doesn't have that kind of control, he's going to very quickly, he's run out of his honeymoon period very quickly. And it's going to change. It's going to change not just in 2 years, we'll see probably a change in the House of Representatives, maybe the Senate. But even before then, he's going to run up against a lot of problems. He can't keep blaming Biden. for the price of eggs.
Right. Well, so we shall see. Right. Right, Lincoln said it, right? You can fool some of the people some of the time, and all the, you can fool all the people some of the time, some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So, God, I hope you're absolutely right. But now that you brought, well, there's one last thing I want to ask you now that you brought it up. I'm scared because I look at the world in the 1930s and the 1940s, and I see, or 1920s to 1940s, and I see a lot of similarities. Are we seeing you think we're seeing a global rise in fascism?
Yes, there's no question. I mean, the populist parties in Europe, I mean, they're already in power in Italy, although she's been a little more moderate than people thought she would be. You've got Macron under pressure in France and Le Pen coming on there. You've got the AFD and the, you've got Elon Musk basically supporting these far right parties. And then Farage's party in Britain. And once again, Musk is out there using his, using his social media platform to support these candidates. It's not just Steve Bannon anymore. It's Elon Musk with all the money in the world. It's just really very dangerous. And then you get a trade war going on with the various countries, and that just increases tension. You're going to see NATO being under great pressure, thanks to Trump. And that has been a security deterrent against aggression in the past, and if it's weakened, it's gonna be great. They'll be celebrating in the Kremlin. So, yeah, this is disturbing.
Yeah, and I hope you're right about some of this, and I can tell you that I just came from Brazil, where I talked in an international conference, and there's a guy down there that, they just let him out of jail and they reelected him. We've got India and all the China and all these other places. So, and USAID, if our listeners haven't figured it out, this is probably the greatest weapon that we have right now against fascism, and the greatest tool we have to reach out to the world. Mm-hmm. And J. Brian Atwood, you're an amazing man, and thank you so much for coming on our show. We play out every show. We play out with a song we dedicated to our guest, and I couldn't think of any better song to play for you than USA Africa, We Are the World, because we got to remember, folks, right? We're not in this alone. We're in this together. Thank you, Brian, for all your great work, and Ambassador, have a great day, and thanks so much for being with us. I hope this all pans out and that we can have you back on the show in a few months and we can say, yay, USAID still exists.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. You're great.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye. Give the people their right to vote.